Section 21 and 22, the changes here are referencing changes. I don't believe there's anything terribly exciting there. And Section 23 also incorporates the definitions established.
The deletions that are found in Section 21 and 21 is, are those of substance, or are those just because they're handled elsewhere?
Those sections are being replaced by this bill, Senator.
Okay. Thank you.
And Section 23 includes this definition established earlier and previously in the bill.
Section 23 is the manufacturer, right?
Right.
Imports, manufacturers, okay. Vessels.
Questions on Section 23?
I don't think so. 23 is the importing, manufacturing. 24 is intentionally altering. Anybody, Jack?
No.
Anybody else? 24 is what
well,
you
I do have
oh, questions. Jack has a question.
It's a Class B felony for illegal possession of a handgun. Contrasted with the A misdemeanor for that we had just a moment ago.
For manufacturing.
For manufacturing.
Yes.
Manufacturing or causes to be manufactured.
Keeps, offers, exposes, gives, lends, or possesses.
But it says possesses too, so I don't. That's a straight possession there.
Mm-hmm. That's an oversight.
I mean.
That's an oversight. Because we have a separate sanction for possession. And it was meant to be. Those who are manufacturing and carrying on some sort of dealings without having proper licensing, as I understood the section.
So what did you intend to have under here? Lend or give, or how far did you want to go down that list?
How about keeps?
You can go as far as lends, because actually, in terms of possession, there are a number of special exceptions for people taking care of family and so forth, but
well, a question Jack asks is keeps. Do we know what that? Do you want keeps in there? If you want it, isn't that the same as possesses?
Madam Chair, John Nichols, that was, I think. The problem is caused by that current statute that we just substituted the definition of handgun for pistol and revolver and added short barrel rifle, short
so
barrel shotgun,
law.
And suppressor into it, and then made it a Class B felony and didn't look at the editing of the rest of the.
So you need to go back and refigure. So we really need, could you fix it up for, I mean, what is your recommendation here? How
if you took handgun out, you would take care of it because. I don't think we're as much concerned about handguns as we were talking about other kinds of weapons that were subject to federal licensing, short-barreled rifles, short-barreled shotguns, firearms, silencers, and machine guns, all of which are a special class of weapons that require federal licensing and were subject to special restrictions here. And the idea was to get after someone who is manufacturing or delivering, but then we already had another statute that dealt with possession. Without a license.
Yeah, I understand. My concern is not, I'm not sure you want to delete handgun if you kind of takes off. That does change the, what you're trying to do here, it seems to me. But the question I have is more keeps. You know, maybe if we take out possession, you ought to probably keep out keep, too. I don't, I mean, that,
no
it's, a, isn't it, Jack?
I agree.
13A covers, this seems redundant in a sense, because 13A covers unlawful possession of machine guns, sawed-off guns, and that type of thing, and that's a B felony. This is a B felony, but the inclusion of handgun, I thought, was supposed to be covered in Section 13, which is the possession statute, which would be an A misdemeanor.
This is really supposed to be a manufacturing provision.
Okay, well, then let's make it manufacturing. I mean, that's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean, let's figure out what we want to say
handgun
here and change it and deal with it in a way. So handgun needs to be deleted. Yes. And
if you took out keeps, possesses.
And handgun, right? I guess. Jack said.
The only thing that really needs to come out, it looks to me, is handgun, because the rest of it is simply redundant with 13A, which is a B felony as well. That's possession. All these other things. All of these other things would include possession. So.
Well, we already have unlawful possession of a handgun as a Class A misdemeanor.
We don't have unlawful manufacturing.
Now the question is unlawful manufacturing. And actually, it's interesting that we don't cover rifles in here. I guess you can unlawfully manufacture a rifle, and there's no restriction on that. If you notice the definitions there. We don't say firearm, which would have included everything. But I guess we were trying to stay away from rifles for a reason. We give rifles, ordinary rifles, special consideration throughout this bill. So here you cover handguns, and then you're covering all the kinds of weapons that are subject to special consideration in this bill. Handguns, which have concealed weapons permits, which have waiting periods. Then the rifles, which are subject to federal licensing requirements. Excuse me, the weapons that are subject to federal licensing requirements. But it's really supposed to be manufacturing provision.
So it was intended to include handguns, but you just want to have manufacturing and then exclude
the possession concepts.
Possession concepts. Okay.
In fact, I think giving or lending is problematic there, too. We've already dealt with someone who's transferring a weapon for use in a felony, which takes care of that part of it. And I wouldn't even want to get into giving or lending. I think if you focus on manufacturing in that provision, you're getting at what was the original intention.
Okay, well, let's have Jack sort of check this out and see where we are.
It's interesting that Section 24 received very careful scrutiny from counsel for the NRA, who we dealt with at great length about this business on serial numbers. But the Section 23 language wasn't pointed out to us at all.
Well, let's move on then. We'll take those questions under advisement.
Section 24 deals with the current statute when you alter, remove, or obliterates or changes the name, make, model, manufactured number. This language, and people who shoot in competitions and change barrels and people who refinish guns would technically be in violation of the statute. We changed this and worked around it, and John Nichols can address this better than I can, to allow for those kind of lawful activities still occur, but to not allow for people to remove and the identification marks of firearms.
The idea was to get after the person who's deliberately trying to hide the serial number, trying to conceal the original registration number, as opposed to the person who, in the course of gunsmithing, is just making some other changes in the weapon.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Springer.
Yeah, this is a question for counsel. I know that this chapter 166 is pretty old, and but I'm curious if it states specifically that the punishment upon conviction would be a sentence for not more than 5 years, does that mean that there's no fine that applies? Is that the exclusive punishment? It would seem to me that a person who's doing this might be doing so for a unlawful yet commercial purpose.
It means it's an unclassified felony. The fine for all felonies is $100,000. I don't know whether the fine would be applicable or not. My guess is that it would.
I think that, may I respond to that? I think Senator Springer's observation is correct, and we are dealing with a very old statute, and on further reflection, it would probably be smart to go ahead and move this into our classification system as to what kind of a felony you want to make it. If we're going to say that manufacturing is a Class B felony, it seems that intentionally altering it might also be a Class B felony.
And as long as you're amending it.
The equivalent of a C now.
Or you can make it a C felony because on the idea that manufacturing is more dangerous than intentionally altering the serial number. Depends on your schema.
A B or a C, I think a C gets the same years with the same potential fine, I guess. It's one or the other.
The term identification number is supposed to mean the manufacturer's serial number?
Madam Chair, Mr. Morris, up until 1938, no firearms were required to have serial numbers. Up until 1968, only, I believe, handguns and certain rifles and shotguns were required to have serial numbers. So you have a whole batch of guns out there that never had a manufacturer's serial number. The procedure is now when they pass through a dealer's hands that he notifies the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and is essentially assigns a number to it, which they okay. So that was the reason for identification number rather than manufacturer serial number.
So identification number isn't meant to include, for instance, a person's ODLM number that they put on it?
Madam Chair, Mr. Morris, in some cases that can be an ODL number if the gun originally did not have one. My father-in-law had a handgun that did not have a serial number, and he talked to the ATF, and they told him just put his driver's license number on it.
So identification number would include that in some cases?
If that was the identifying number of the firearm, yes, it would.
So a person who...
For purposes of federal registration... Or federal recording, isn't that correct?
Yes.
Not just because you happen to put an ODL on your weapon, but if you provide that information to the federal government as the identification number for the firearm.
There are also a number of custom firearms makers who will apply any number to the gun that the customer requests, and it's quite common for them to have either their birth date or their driver's license number, which then becomes the official serial number of the firearm.
May I make a comment on this, though? Every time I've read this, I always wonder, we say intentionally alters, removes, or obliterates, but we don't say with a criminal purpose in mind. I may own a weapon, I may want to change the number on it for the heck of it, and do we really want to make it a heavy-duty crime for me to do that? The idea was the person who just stole the gun trying to change the serial number, or intending to use it in a crime, doesn't want it to be traced, so they try to remove the serial number or the identification number, and so on and so forth. You might consider the idea that of tying this in some sort of nexus with a criminal purpose.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Bransky.
Kind of picking up bits and pieces, but what good reason does someone have for changing a number on a weapon? I can't imagine why someone would want to do that.
So it can't be traced.
I know that's not a good reason. I mean, you said that somebody might just decide to do this. Why would someone do that?
That's a good point.
Senator Grensky, because they purchased the weapon and they want their driver's license number on it instead of the other person's.
Oh, and you asked the question if that was envisioned in the answer in the affirmative. Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Grensky, I'm not a gun expert, but we did get some testimony about a certain type of old gun where they apparently take them apart and polish them up and fix them all up and put them back together, and in the course of that, the numbers do come off. I don't know the first thing about guns, but there actually are some, we've had some people that work with antique guns and older guns that have had some concerns about this.
You've got an exception for antique guns, so that's not really an issue, is it? I mean, that's not...
I don't believe that it is, but this section has raised some problems for persons with older guns who in the course of redoing them or remaking them or whatever you do with a gun takes them off, and I don't...
Well, it's got to be intentional. And we're talking about the numbers. They're just, you can barely see them. If you've seen old guns, you can barely see numbers sometimes. Doesn't seem to me to be
intentionally
big a deal. Okay.
Captain Renfro.
Many of these, many weapons are stolen. One good reason to change or alter a number would be to, in the event it was recovered, the police would be able to trace it to the alleged computer.
Would not.
Yes.
Well, I know that's not. I'm aware of the illegitimate reasons people would want to do this. What I didn't understand was I understood Representative Mannix to say that somebody in the normal course of owning a gun might have some reason to take a number off, and except for the driver's license number or some other ID, personal ID number, I can't imagine what reason that would be. That was
I can see what you're getting at. Why would they have intentionally altered it unless they had a criminal purpose
exactly.
in mind in the first place?
I'm on guns. I can't imagine. I've never even crossed my mind to fool around with the numbers on there. I don't know why you would. Perhaps we could move along. If I might be so bold.
Okay. I'm having some debate here with my committee members who want to adjourn tonight because they think they're fuzzy. We're trying to figure out exactly when we could meet again tomorrow. We've got morning conference committees plugged in. A lot of them. So we're looking at sometime tomorrow afternoon.
Madam
finish up,
Chair,
Corey.
If I may, the bill does. This is the big stuff. After we get here, we're dealing with a lot of included for drafting technical
okay,
reasons.
Let's try to finish up.
Good question.
Really. Substantial.
Even if we get through this, I mean, we're a long ways from being ready to vote on this thing.
Oh, sure. Well, I know that.
That's not something we're just going to...
The which one?
Section 29.
Study.
Isn't that a major kind of thing?
It's the study.
Actually, because it's just a study, it may not turn out to be so major. But it's up to your decision.
We've had recommendations that we do the whole bill for a study up here tonight. We're going to have to go with something. If you want to go quickly, let's just hang in here another 10 minutes and see how far we're getting. We'll full understanding that we'll have to take up some time tomorrow and probably tomorrow afternoon to get into the questions that have been raised.
Go ahead.
Okay.
So,
Section 25,
we're not applying it to antique firearms, right?
And that definition in Section 1. Do you want me to just roll along and stop me?
Yeah.
Section 26, these deal with who sells or exchanges any kind of gunpowder type of thing to a minor. We deleted the 10-grain language.
Now, weren't the firecrackers here?
some of these things.
Gunpowder?
What we're saying is you can give kids little firecrackers. There's separate statutes dealing with firecrackers anyway, but we were trying to say when are we moving into a more explosive devices and leaving aside
this goes beyond. We're not talking about guns here. We're talking about something that's covered.
Correct.
Why the deletion of guns?
Because we deal with that in the section on the transfer, the section on possession. And we include children in those sections.
Madam Chair, can we go back? I'm sorry, can we go back to 25 for just a moment there?
Sure, we can go back.
And again, I know we're dealing with old language here, but we're taking out the antique pistols or resolvers and also the language incapable of use as such. I assume that means that, although it's not very clear or artful, are we making a substantive change here that in terms of distinguishing antique firearms that don't work as opposed to antique firearms that may work as well?
No longer going to be, this whole bill is designed to apply to firearms, and under the definition of firearms, which comes up at page 2, you're talking about a weapon that uses smokeless powder, which is not the black powder weapons. Then for one section that had to do with use of a firearm in the commission of another crime, we go back to saying that we'll include black powder guns for those purposes. And in terms of general controls, we leave out antique firearms generally, and we don't make a distinction whether or not they're capable of use or not. And there is a definition, I'm trying to look for it right now, on antique firearms. It's on page 1. We're talking match locks, flint locks, percussion caps, and it's a federal definition for pre-1898 manufacture. And so it was intentional to say, we don't care whether you can use that flint lock or not, we're not going to regulate it.
Madam Chair, Senator Springer, the intent of this is really to unregulate antique firearms. The only exception is use of antique firearms in the commission of crimes, because they can still hurt.
Okay. As it relates to the concealed weapon permit, are you saying that you would not need a concealed weapon permit for an antique firearm?
I think so.
Pardon me?
Excuse me. I said if it is, that should be changed because that was not the intent.
I don't believe so. It's 166.290 is the statute that deals with concealed permits, and that is not what listed.
No. We define handgun separately, Senator Springer. Handgun can include those antique firearms again. So you're slipping back into that, and that was another deliberate choice. We're talking about a concealed handgun permit now. And the definition of handgun is, as long as you have a fixed cartridge containing a propellant charge, primer, and projectile, and there we don't make any distinction about smokeless or black powder or anything else. So if you're carrying an antique handgun concealed, you better get a permit.
Thanks for clarifying that. I see the substantive change there in the language, and I just wasn't sure. Referring back and forth between the new language and then the old provisions of Chapter 166, and I apologize. Reading this for the first time, it's a little hard to mesh it all together.
Reading it for the 25th time is hard to mesh. 125th time, hard to mesh it all together.
Section 27, okay. It's in here for referencing reasons. I have no idea what those do. Section 28 is the same as reference, changes a reference. Section 29 is the study.
Question on that.
Yes.
We're talking about studying rifles, shotguns, or other long gun. We don't define rifle or long gun, and we don't define shotgun, except that it's not a short barrel shotgun. I'm wondering are those defined elsewhere, or did you decide you didn't need to define them?
I think the honest answer is that we thought that they were self-defined, particularly because of the other definitions, which would exclude certain kinds of weapons, and handguns are already defined, and they're subject to special a special waiting period and permit process. In terms of common usage, long gun, shotgun, rifle are pretty well understood.
A long gun is pretty well understood, too.
To my understanding, it is. Maybe Mr. Nichols can help with that.
So. I don't know where that term came from. It seems to be redundant to rifles and shotguns, but...
So we're not sure what long... Okay. Even though the study does record, it does have some.
There's been a rifle, shotgun, or other long gun.
I think
that would be anything that's more than a short gun.
Well, it was as opposed to a short-barreled rifle or a short-barreled shotgun, which are subject to separate considerations.
You have to excuse us.
It's been a long day.
A long day as opposed to a short day.
Okay.
the basic idea of the study is to keep, is to take a look at the information of long guns and other guns besides handguns, see if they're being used in crime, see if criminals are purchasing them over the counter.
Why don't we just say semi-automatics and all that sort of thing instead of trying to make them be long guns? Or is that what you're really after?
Well, actually, well, semi-automatics are usually rifles.
Or handguns.
Although you...
shotguns.
Yeah, semi-automatics can also include handguns. But other long guns, there was meant to define rifles and shotguns that are not short-barreled rifles or short-barreled shotguns, which are subject to federal licensing. And I think that's the reason for saying or other long guns. And then interesting that we then later say and other long guns.
It certainly is. It's broad enough that you can cover anything that's.
So you really want to study anything and everything.
Correct. Section 30.
We'll let the statisticians have fun with that.
Okay.
Okay.
We do have Representative who has some amendments, so I want to get to him before we adjourn tonight and before we recess tonight.
Section 3?
Yes.
This is the same kind of deal, a study with concealed weapon licenses. And the breakdown is listed there.
And I would say to members, if we will take up these at some time when you've read them a little more, if there are questions that come up, but in the meantime, we'll sort of give you a roadmap of what's in here. Okay.
Section 31 is destroying the information obtained in the study, so we don't have any kind of registration of long guns, and fire, which was very much opposed to by the gun lobby. And then Section 32 appropriates money for the purposes of the act, and the main part of that is the study. Section 33, I'll turn to Holly and let her have fun with that.
Section 33 gives the district courts specific authority to hear cases or appeals that arise under this act. 34 does the same thing.
Question, Madam Chair. This section gives the district court exclusive jurisdiction, and yet we want not, as I recall under Section 11, the district court doesn't have exclusive jurisdiction.
It doesn't say exclusive, Senator, I think.
And the other sections are subsequently amended as well.
You're referring to subsection 1 of that statute.
No, all right.
We have a separate subsection 3, and it doesn't use the word exclusive there.
You're
That's
right.
On page 25, line
you're correct.
10.
34 does the same thing for justice courts. 35 does the same thing for municipal courts. Section 36 was a section that was added as a result of discussions involving creating a class of prohibited persons based on mental illness resulting in a civil commitment, and added new language to the civil commitment statutes, which would require the court to make a separate finding regarding...
Okay, I do want to say that we want to come back to that one because I have an interest in going through
since circuit courts do have jurisdiction under Section 11, I'm sorry to keep coming back to this, do we want something somewhere that gives them jurisdiction?
It was our recommendation from the state court administrator that it was not necessary. That section and... The sections creating the appeals process and all the subsequent revisions were done in conjunction with the state court administrator's office.
Okay. Apparently that's because they're the trial court of general jurisdiction. But they would already have jurisdiction.
They would have jurisdiction,
kind of
but the lesser court needs to be granted jurisdiction. Okay.
Section 36, as you mentioned, is the new language to the civil commitment statutes. This would be, in the way that the bill is currently written, these criteria would obviously be in place, would be utilized subsequent to the effective date of the act.
I could explain that. That was a compromise worked out because of the concern about what do you do with these civil commitments? Are you going to assume that because someone is civilly committed that they are incapacitated from having a firearm? And we finally came around to the notion that a judge should simply ask that question every time. From the evidence that I've seen in this case, should I make a notation that this person shouldn't have access to firearms? They've had a chance to present whatever case they've wanted. The judge is in the best position to make notation of that at the time of the decision, and that
That way we avoided going back and reviewing a decision, trying to determine whether or not that's the way it should have been interpreted. So we left it in the hands of the person most involved in the decision-making in a given commitment proceeding.
Okay. Let's move on to Representative Calhoun, since I think we've got the big Section 38, I guess.
Yes, I was going to suggest that the committee look at Section 38.
Which is the, and I assume that is a...
I'll have, Madam Chair, before we...
Senator Gritsky.
I'll have to apologize to the committee. I ran into Representative Calhoun in the hall and made the mistake of mentioning that we had this bill in front of the committee. For that.
You should.
Oh, I think he would, yes. He knows where this bill is.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. There are a number of little things that I would hope to get to, but because of the time in the session, I may not have the chance. There's basically one large amendment or one large problem that I still see with the bill, and I voted for the bill out of the House because I think it was a real good faith effort, and most of the problems that were still in the bill when it left my subcommittee were fixed. The definition for, well, it's kind of, there's two parts to it. First part are people that are on pretrial release from offenses, and the second part would be the definition of misdemeanors involving violence. My concern is that we try to adopt a federal definition, which I don't believe applies to possession. It only applies to purchases of firearms